Because
you need to stop saying that. Like that, it's like the it's just recycling the same materials. Like people are listening to us.
It seems like it's so like all of a sudden like Rena gets a whim and then all of a sudden the whole band has to get together.
I agree.
And like all of a sudden we're like, is this gonna be like, the only one we're gonna do? And then we're never gonna have to do another one or something, or we never get to do another one. When Rena's busy, all of a sudden, then we don't get to do one?
Maybe you guys could schedule some people. That would be nice. Right?
Are we even allowed to? I feel like if we schedule someone, you're just going to be like, well, I'm too busy. I can't even do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I'm with 10, actually, Rena. I don't know why we do this.
Doesn't it feel weird, Josh? Like, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, like, after, like, like 3 or 4 months, Rena's just like, oh, we're doing one. And then what if we don't do another one?
Are you saying you don't want to do these anymore?
No, I'm not saying that. I'm just saying I would like to, like, are you all in? Can we confirm with the audience right now that you are all in with the comics Claptrap?
Because I feel like I'm in the real world.
Are you going to find
a new roommate?
I just feel like...
Whatever, Tim. Screw you guys.
If you
find a new roommate, that's fine.
I just feel like you might be doing it here for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You want full-on Puck. You don't want half Puck. You want full on Puck.
Yeah, that's a great reference from 10 years ago.
I know nobody in comics today.
What the hell is Puck?
Nobody in comics knows who Puck is. Google that.
That's probably the saddest thing is when I looked at the Ignatz nomination today, and today is when I realized I am old. We are too old.
I looked at
the name of the Ignatz, and I'm just like, I don't know any of these people.
I think that's embarrassing that Tim and I had the same, like, idea when we first saw it. Like, I felt old just because I didn't know these. There are older, there are people, our contemporaries, mm-hmm. that are nominated, but a lot of the people on that list, I was like, miss that.
These kids are probably, like, 21.
But they do good art. I mean, I'm not
saying
that.
Yeah, I'm not saying they're not. I'm just saying that it makes me feel out of touch.
I feel like I'm just, like... Chasing the comics train.
I just feel like, like our heyday is over. Yeah. We're like olden day guys
now.
We're done. No.
Well, I mean, you can be in touch. I don't know when you were in touch, but I mean, I know a lot of the work that was nominated, but it still makes me feel old because it is by and large, like a lot of young artists, I would say.
No, I totally do know the work. I've seen the work. I guess I don't know the people.
Yeah.
So it makes me think, oh my god, this is like
where have I been?
Oh, you knew like group of people, you know, like we've been like these guys that like we knew everybody, you know, every con you like knew everybody and the movers and the shakers, you know, other than Dan Zedlock, I don't think I hung out with any of the people that are on that list.
Well, I think back when we supposedly knew the movers and shakers, I think there were just a lot fewer people, right? I mean,
yeah,
you're right.
But I mean, the thing is, the names that have been coming up, like Joe Lambert and you know,
Leo Westman.
Yeah, all these people that have been coming, Angie Wang and stuff. I see their name and I see their work and I know them. I just don't know them, you know, and it makes me feel like...
You feel like there's not like a community that remember?
No, just feels like another generation's replacing us.
Yeah,
And that's how things are going to go, but it makes me feel a little old, you know?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't disparage them. I mean, I think their work are pretty good and they're doing things that blows my mind.
But Jen, mm-hmm. remember way back, I think in the first podcast, we talked about... How they were like, where are all the women in the knowledge?
Yeah, now all the women
are
there.
What are you gonna say?
No, I have no. I actually, I gotta say, looking at the Ignatz nominations, I was impressed this year. But but I do have to say, like I said, it is a young man's game now. And I feel like the Ignatz is, this year
a
has distinguished itself from all the other awards as like, this is an award that's probably more on the cutting edge than...
I'm kind of pissed off, though.
What?
About the Ignatz.
Is this going to be about Los Brothers Hernandez again?
No. I think there should be more men in as nominees this year. More men. Where are the men?
Where are all the white men?
I'm really pissed off. The white men. What happened to them?
More old ladies.
Yeah.
I do. I you know, though, as long as Dan Zekwak is still there, I feel like the world is still okay.
Yeah.
You know, I can still hang on to that. I know that guy.
He's your last connection to the...
Yeah, who else do we know from that besides Dan?
Like, personally?
Yeah. You
know. Tom Hart got nominated.
Tom Hart did. Oh, that's great. That book was awesome, right?
Mm-hmm. Austin got nominated.
Oh, yeah. See, that's the thing, too.
Wait, Tom Hart got nominated for a story, not his actual...
Oh, yeah.
Right, for a story in Secret Prison.
Which I think he should have been nominated for Daddy Lightning,
yeah.
But you guys...
No, see, like, Austin got nominated, and as much as... You know, I always viewed Austin as this young kid, and I never understood his artwork, and now Austin's stuff is starting to be mainstream, which makes me feel I don't know. I'm just saying.
The Ignatz are mainstream.
I'm just playing. I'm feeling old. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah,
and I'm not trying to say that the Ignatz are bad or anybody. That's just, I'm just saying
Bell's
I'm getting old. Oh, is she?
Gabrielle Bell.
Yeah, and I can tell I'm also getting old because I'm not so mean to the Ignatz. Like, I'm actually like, oh, this is good. And I feel like that's just me.
Yeah,
like,
I think you're mellowing. Yeah, you're mellowing out.
I give up.
Yeah,
fine.
You're an old man mellowing out.
Yeah, our listeners are like, these sound like three old people rambling.
Yeah.
I bet you those people that listen are just the whole time. The young kids are listening. They're
Hello.
Just like... Oh, look at these old guys.
Yeah.
They're probably, hey, you guys listen to those old dudes on the podcast? It's so funny.
So
about
out
the
of
old,
touch.
Olden days when they were actually cartoonists.
I know, when they actually worked and not chased kids around.
I need to tell you something. I am drinking this, like, rum concoction that Lark made for me just now to celebrate how old we are.
I brought me and Rena Filipino food, and so that's, if you hear us eating,
no
that's
chips.
What it is. No more chips. See, we're old. No more chips and salsa, we're eating, like,
chips.
Fancy foods now. Jikes.
Fancy,
jikes.
Fancy Filipino food.
So,
all
right. Rena, right now, say into this microphone
New
right
comics.
Now. Say into this microphone right now that you're all in on this podcast and that you're not just gonna leave me and Josh and the audience in the lurch, like, after this podcast, there'll be one within a month,
the sabbatical, this whatever it was totally not my fault. I mean,
what?
I mean, you were doing things too. You have this
new
book out that is coming someday. I don't know.
We need to be able to count on you, Rena.
Yeah, that's what we're saying.
I had to take odd jobs and stuff between podcasts.
Between the times that we've had a sabbatical...
Whatever, Josh, you're like the king of magic now.
Gotta feed my family.
Hey, you guys, are there even podcasts left? I feel like, since we were not doing podcasts, I wasn't paying attention
you're
to the other podcast, or
still
I just feel like they're not gone. They're
you're
gone now.
I mean, you're still not paying attention. Like,
Ink Panther is gone.
No, they're not.
They're back.
Ink Panther's back too?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
What about Ink Studs?
Ink Studs
gone?
He's still interviewing people? Yeah.
Who's he interviewing?
Who did he interview? Oh, he interviewed Sam Henderson.
Oh, wow. What was the other one?
Jim Rugg has a pretty
Jim
good
has-
podcast.
Jim Rugg has one? Is it about comics or just about life?
Comics. I mean,
talk about life.
Most of the guests are cartoonists.
Can we talk about new comics now?
We're
running late.
So
need some promo time?
No. I just wanted to say... That a lot has happened since Rena decided to take a sabbatical. You
I
know?
Became a publisher, and one of my books did not get nominated for the Ignatz, but I'm not bitter.
All your books didn't get nominated for the Ignatz.
I only
that's because you.
I only submitted one, but it's okay.
That's
because
you keep publishing old people.
That's true.
Yeah, you gotta stop that.
And it is old material, so.
And Josh, you're basically a professional
magic
now, right?
No, but
King of Magic Land.
It's complicated.
To be old.
How are you doing,
Josh?
Yeah,
it's complicated to be old. Huh?
How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. You know, I don't have like a lot of comics news, so.
Oh, wow. Okay. Wow, we are really.
I went to Comic Con though. This was the first time I've been to Comic Con where Tin was not there. I think.
Oh, I was, dude. Don't even bring that up. I was super sad about it. Like,
why didn't you go?
Because I had like this was the one year that just like things happened that just made me not want to not able to go, mm-hmm. And I kept like trying to go like up even to the last minute. I was like, maybe I can just drive to Comic Con for Saturday and then come back on Sunday and all, you know, it's just like, and it was sounding to me in my head like more and more ridiculous, like why do I really want to go to this show that bad?
Yeah.
And but it was like honestly it's weird because I've been going for so long that I just really felt like there was a part of me missing, and even though if I went I would just be sitting around hanging out with friends, I'm not gonna go like, I'm not waiting in line to see like Breaking Bad or anything like that, but it's
yeah,
still,
and
it's
but
still,
probably
I still missed it.
Probably none of your friends went though, Tin. I mean, like I think it gets less and less every year.
No, that's the thing. I mean, yeah, less and less, of course. But I mean, there's still people. I just feel like it almost feels like if, because I didn't go to Comic Con, I felt like a little bit out of touch with the comic community. I felt like
comic community?
No, I just felt like I was less of a professional cartoonist. Now I feel like. You know what I mean? I just felt like everybody in comics who was anybody was there, and I wasn't.
Mm. Yeah.
I don't know.
I think that's the overwhelming theme of today. We just seem out of touch with what's going on.
but
it's a treat for listeners.
It's been 6 months since the last podcast, and we're just all disillusioned.
I didn't go, and I felt out of touch. And Josh went, and he felt out of touch.
Oh, man, we're back. This is the most depressing episode. Is this the last? I think this should be the last episode.
Oh my god,
like,
we just came back.
It's
Rina,
been like the saddest
Rina,
thing
say
ever.
That to the mic. Are you on board with this?
I am getting a drink.
Alright. So Josh, how was Comic-Con for you? Just because you went. What was the coolest thing and what was the crappiest thing? We're playing high level today.
I don't have good answers for that, but I'll say that it was not the best show for me. Like, and it was pretty. I mean, I don't know. There were people who did well, I'm sure, but a lot of the comics people I talked to were all kind of grumbly and sad, and you know, like we said, like fewer people that we know go every year, and like LaVon Jahanian and David King came to my table at one point. They were there for like part of a day.
Come on, they were
like, man, you're like the last one, and that made me feel stupid. So.
Josh, David and LaVon.
You mean the most two cheeriest people
yeah,
in the world?
Come on.
Well, I'm just saying, they were like two of the only people I saw there,
you know,
who from the old crew.
Also, you know, I thought you by now had like so much magic clout that was going to be super easy for you to like get these like magic card exclusives. But no, not even Josh. Super.
Do they do those there?
Yeah, but he didn't get it because I don't know what happened.
I didn't want to wait in line.
But I mean,
so.
you're like the magic guy. They didn't just come to your table and give you a bunch of them.
You know, I talked to the guy from Wizards of the Coast who designed the recent set, and he couldn't get them. Like they weren't giving them to anyone.
Yikes, bro.
Yeah.
What are you guys even talking about?
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about comics.
Don't worry about it.
New comics time.
Woo-hoo. We need to get a theme song for that.
New comics time.
Just in time for the last episode.
Yeah, Rena.
I'm committed.
What is your?
It depends on what your definition
email?
Of commitment.
What's your,
committed
what's your email? Yambooks.com.
Info@yambooks.com.
Okay, you guys, please send Rena email saying.
We also have comics claptrap.
We want her. We want her to continue with this. Me and Josh really want to do this. It's Rena who's
like... This sounds
like
a PBS pledge break.
We're just saying. All right, so Josh, what comics
Tin and I
have
are
you
all
bought?
Live.
It's been a long time, so you better have some stuff.
Well, I have a few comics to talk about. I mean, obviously a lot of comics have come and gone. So one, though, that...
And
that
gone
stood,
is the keyword.
Yeah. Well, and a lot that everybody's already heard of, but I want to bring some up here. So one that stood out to me that... came out in the past, 6 months maybe, is It Will All Hurt by Farrell Dalrymple.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And this was published by Study Group Comics and mm-hmm. Press Gang, so those guys up in Portland, Zach Soto and Francois. And it's a beautiful book. It has, I don't know if it's a risograph cover or something, and it's got these full color on newsprint inside, and it's a fantasy story that kind of shifts between all of these different characters, and I thought it was quite enjoyable. I think it's just the first issue, and there will be more. Do you guys know Farrell's art?
I love.
This is the story.
Farrell's Popgun Moore was one of my favorites when I started reading. Man, this theme of like old time comics.
Yeah. I used to love Farrell's Popgun Moore.
I still love Farrell's work.
This is the comic that was serialized on City Group 12 first.
No, I don't think so. Wait, was it?
It's possible. Yeah, I think it is.
Okay.
I don't. Yeah, it was on Study Group.
Okay.
Before. So yeah, if you go to studygroupcomics.com, you can see lots of cool comics, including this one, if you want to get a sense of what it's like.
Okay. Cool. Is it like one whole story, or is it like a serial?
It ends on a note where it seems like it could continue. So it's a pretty, you know, it's a satisfying chunk of story, but I think there's probably more to come.
Wasn't Farrell doing like superhero stuff for a while?
I don't know.
Yeah, I think he was working for one of the major mainstream companies, but I don't know.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. That's a good name to have come up again, so I'm excited that he's doing something awesome.
Okay. Yeah.
What else you got, Josh?
I have Raw Power number 2 by Josh Baer, which is published by Retrofit.
Uh-huh.
And
is that one of those the small companies? Is that the Box Brown company?
Yeah,
it is.
Okay.
So that's one of the, right, like this new crew of kind of mini comics publishers, but this is actually like a magazine size book.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's the same format as the first issue of Raw Power, if you saw that, where it's got, like, newsprint inside, and Josh Baer does really kind of dense art that has lots of, it's really, like, rough and kind of dirty and lots of hatching, and he throws in lots of, like, Zip-A-Tone and stuff, and so it's this is a continuation of the first issue.
Okay.
It's about this character who has been sent to jail. He was a vigilante. He kind of had this worldview that he built based on these books by G. Gordon Liddy. And so he was sent to jail, and this issue is about his release from jail and if he can reintegrate into society. And there's a lot to it. It's like a really – I don't know how many pages this is. It's hard to tell when it's like a book with these thin newsprint pages, but it's like a lot of comics in here.
Mm-hmm.
Was it good?
Yeah, I liked it.
Cool.
So check that out. You can go to retrofitcomics.com to find out more about that one.
Is Retrofit one of the companies where you can actually get a subscription and then they will send you, or is that just that one other company?
I think Retrofit does that, so, but you can also buy all of the comics separately.
You can buy them at the stores, too.
Yeah, I got this at the local comic shop.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
So, but it's worth checking out. Like, they publish lots of good artists on there.
Cool.
What else you got?
Okay, and then this is probably the last thing to bring up. I mean, there's lots of great stuff has come out already, but we don't need to talk about it at all. And I don't actually know if this is out yet. I got this at Comic-Con, and sometimes they sell stuff that's not quite released yet. But this is from Fantagraphics. This is Steven Weissman's Barack Hussein Obama collection.
Oh, yeah, that's been out.
Okay. So, and these were also
online. I love that book.
Yeah, these were online on Fantagraphics' blog previously.
Yeah.
And it's a very strict, it's kind of strange, like the characters are, you know, the president and vice president and first lady and all the people in that crew. But
The crew.
Yeah, it kind of is like the crew in that type, in that world. It's like a parallel.
Yeah, they act very silly though, and they don't actually, you know, behave in any sort of.
Yeah. Oh, so it's not. But, this is not biographical.
No, it's
or,
like a parody.
Like, oh, okay.
Whatever. You know how Barack's like this cool dude type of guy. And...
Yeah, it doesn't really correspond to anything very realistic. But and he does the art. It looks like he did the art maybe on a. A Moleskine sketch pad, and it's like just in various like ballpoint pen and marker and stuff, and it's so it's really it looks really raw, but it was so they're just 4-panel strips basically. This is a collection of 4-panel kind of gag strips about those characters.
That is one of my favorite books.
Really,
I love.
When did that come out?
I think it was last year, I'm not sure, but Steve White.
I don't know, it's a new book, Rena, so I don't know if maybe if you're looking at something different.
Is it the hardcover or the black hardcover with the gold leaf?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I guess I got it at Ape or something.
You might have gotten it early at some ship too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
What happened?
You guys you guys do know the movers and the shakers,
really,
getting stuff early
really
all the time.
It's really been a long time.
Yeah, it's been a while.
I don't even know. I thought it had just had happened.
What had happened was.
But yeah, that's one of my favorites. And Steve Weisman's one of my favorite artists. I mean, just the way he just seems like it's so easy
this
for him.
This is the guy that used
to
do
to just draw
champs,
stuff.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So does he, cheeks and, you know,
yeah, does he draw like Barack Obama, like that style?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah,
I totally want this
awesome
book now.
It looks like he does it with just simple markers, you know, tip and like, you know.
It doesn't really look like, I wouldn't say it looks very much like those though. I don't know.
It has that gestural quality, it's that loose style that he does.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you would probably like this book, Tim.
It's funny.
Oh, I like that guy's stuff a lot. I have a few of his books.
It makes Barack Obama look like this bro-y dude.
Really?
Like,
oh, I'm excited to see this now.
One of my favorites that I liked is...
Is Josh
is
not
Ted,
done yet?
Ted
Are you done yet, Josh?
Oh, well, he said it was the last
one. Yeah, yeah. I know you guys have to move on to our big guest.
Oh.
And I know what Rena's going to bring up, too, and I have that book, too. So let's just talk about that.
He can read your mind. He knows me so well. Even after, like, 6 months, Josh and I are just like...
You didn't get the pre-show memo, Tim?
I did not get the pre-show memo.
Yeah.
Oh, I did, but I didn't read it.
It came a couple months ago.
Ted, hey, guys. Ted May's new comic, Men's Feelings, is a fun read.
Uh-huh. Did you publish that?
No, I didn't. I'm not promoting anybody that I publish, although Sasha Mardu's comic... just came out too, rave reviews called Sky and Stereo.
Rave from you?
No, from a lot of people. So anyway, Ted May's book is one of my favorites this summer, and it's published by David Nuss, who I'm saying his last name right. Nuss.
I think so.
What is the new? What is it? What's
Revival House Press.
Yeah.
Is that another micro publisher?
Yes.
Yikes.
Yep.
So it's just a mini that someone else published,
like,
or is
comic.
It like a book?
It's like a digest.
It's like digest size.
Oh, okay. That's cool. You can just get that in your local comic store. You don't have to order that some weird site or anything like that.
I think you get it at the comic stores, yeah.
Soon you can get it from Revival House Press.
Yeah, I think I just... Oh, no, I got it through USS Catastrophe, which you guys gotta get, you know, if you wanna... Remember those days of mini-comic of, you know, Kevin Huizenga and Dan Zetwalk? They're still making some good mini-comics on
really?
The side. Yeah. So go get those, too. And then from that Ignatz list, one of my favorites is Sam Alden. And I really like his comics, especially the ones he posted on his Tumblr site, the Hawaii. The Hawaii 1977? I'm not getting these titles right.
Yeah.
But,
No. That's right.
Yeah. So, I mean, I love that comic. So, check out his stuff, too.
Can I talk about one of my favorite comics?
Oh.
I've really been enjoying Hawkeye. Have we talked
about
how much I love Hawkeye? Hawkeye is amazing.
Okay, hurry up.
Because
Because I guess
it's a superhero comic, right?
I guess it's probably like, wow, he's talking about Hawkeye and he's making me wait.
It's a superhero comic, right? But it is has a lot of like alternative indie comic aesthetics. I think the stories are basically about this guy's life. He just happens to be Hawkeye, I think, and I think it's neat because it's not like very superhero. It deals more with the everyday life of this guy, and I think the artist is one of my favorites right now, David Aja. I believe that's how it's pronounced. It's spelled AJA, but I really think that book is something special, and like the way he draws the panels and lays out panels. Sometimes you can tell that it's really inspired by alternative comics, and so I've really been enjoying the series. I hope it continues to be good.
Can I just ask about Hawkeye something?
Uh-huh.
Is that the one where the pages look kind of like Chris Ware design?
But that's only
kind of.
That's only one issue. I mean, he did that.
Okay, so it's not all like that.
No. That's actually just a weird special thing.
I found that super confusing.
He did a book, that book, and it just didn't have very like the whole book is written all in how a dog would view the world. You know, so like there was no text. Like all the text would just be scribbles because the dog doesn't understand.
It looked like I was looking at an iPhone.
Yeah, so that particular issue was like the special, like, and I do think that they were like, "Ooh, look at us, we're trying something crazy new." When everybody read alternative comics is like, "Oh my god, we've seen this before," but
sort of.
The other issues are less gimmicky, maybe.
Yeah, but they're still a little gimmicky. I mean, they don't tell the story straightforward the way like an American, like a normal superhero comic would. He likes to play with like the form and the way that he tells stories. And I think since these stories are just like one-offs, you know, and it doesn't really connect to the Marvel universe, he can like these stories are completely separate from the Avengers and all that. So he can tell these stories, and I think that's neat.
And Hawkeye's superpower is very good aim.
Yeah, he really doesn't have any, and that's kind of what is awesome about it, because, you know, he just goes on with life, and he's just this a terrible person that just happens to know how to shoot the arrow really well. Or the arrow?
Right.
Yeah. He's really good at
he
archery.
He shoots that arrow.
Yeah. His power is he's really good at archery.
I guess there are some problems, though, that you just can't solve with archery.
Yeah. Hopefully.
Okay.
So that's...
Oh, wait, one more. We were talking about girls in comics, women in comics, and I have to suggest Genevieve Castries, Susceptible. It just came out in the spring. A book that I really love, too, is... When David Lost His Voice by Judith maybe Vanderstall.
Look at Rita trying to act like she's like cool and in the now.
I am cool in the now. That's why I haven't been podcasting with you guys oldies for a while.
We're not buying you, Rita.
Alright.
I'm not buying you at all,
Rita.
Anyway, try to go get those. Get your comics.
And Sky and Stereo 2 by Sasha Mardu is very good also.
Is it?
I didn't have to pay him to say that.
It is. I got it.
He got it.
I had to pay for my copy, actually.
It's been a while.
Somehow.
I know, and I told him. I berated him for doing that.
Mm.
Yeah.
Because he should have bought two copies.
I know.
All right, Josh. We miss you so much.
No, So Josh, we will do the show
are
again.
Ageless, Josh.
Are we doing a show every 2 weeks?
What?
You know, we have to start making some connections with all of these kids because we were interviewing all old people and we're run out.
We're
so we need to get some.
We're trying to get them out of the way first, and then we'll talk to the young kids.
Who are some of the young kids that you want to talk to, Rena? Or Josh? Have we talked to all the young kids?
I don't even know.
Didn't we talk to
that
one young kid?
I know toddlers.
Didn't we know that one young kid that's like really popular right now? He's in Canada.
Oh, Michael DeForest.
Did we talk to him yet?
We talked about him.
Oh, okay. See, we're good. We're good with that dude.
He's not even young anymore. He's like what, 20?
We're good with that dude. We should talk to that Joe Lambert guy because I keep seeing his name.
Oh, you know who?
We should call up DeForge and ask for his Rolodex.
Yeah.
Who's Chuck Forsman?
Because
I feel like I've seen that guy before.
Chuck
I heard it, the
he
name
did,
before.
He did End of the Fucking World. What is it? TNETOEW.
What are you doing?
FW. What is it called?
What are you doing right now?
His new book. And then he does. He runs that micro. He runs that mini
right
comic.
Oily.
Thing. What is it? Oily.
Oily.
Yeah, Oily Comics. And a bunch of cool people do comics with for Oily Comics.
This seriously does sound like three out of touch old people.
He does that thing, you know, that thingy.
Who,
you know? Who's
that Chuck Forsman guy? What? What's it called?
It's weird because in most industries, you know, the old guys at least have like something to give to the young guys, but we don't. We don't have anything. Yeah, that's all we got.
And we're not that old.
Well, we are going to be interviewing another old dude.
Yes,
so,
and he's probably aged.
He's probably super mad now.
Yeah,
he's
grumpy,
but 46 minutes older than he should have been. So, Josh, thank you very much, and we will see you in 2 weeks.
Okay, in 2 weeks, guys. Bye.
Thank you, buddy.
Bye, bro.
Bye.
Bye, bro. Okay, bye, Josh.
Do I sound okay?
Yeah, you sound fine.
Okay.
Do we sound okay?
Handsome.
Yeah, you sound more than okay,
really
then, Captain. You sound more than okay.
I hope you're wearing clothes.
Yeah. this whole podcast right now, the theme of this podcast is us being old. Because I guess me and Rena and Josh have just been talking about how we were looking at the Ignatz nomination and not really knowing anybody that's on the list. You know?
Really?
Yeah. I mean, besides Dan, I mean, I know of them.
But all of them are totally deserved of the nomination.
Yeah, I know of them. I just don't really know them. You know what I mean?
There's always something to complain about because they're totally deserving and there's really no reason to complain about them.
There's also, like, Gabrielle Bell and Lily Carey.
Oh, yeah,
Lily
Carey
is a newbie. I've never met that girl.
She's really
I feel
super
like
awesome.
She's 15.
She's super old.
She's 20-something.
Oh, really? Oh.
I think.
Well, actually, Ben Catmull, even though Ben Catmull is an old dude, he is still, like,
he is
with the movers and shakers. Like, he knows all the new guys. Like, you hang with Joe Lambert and shit, right?
I've never met Joe Lambert.
You kick it with Chuck Forsman and stuff.
Yeah.
I shook hands with Chuck Forsman at Cake.
Really? Is he super young? What is he, like, 17?
I don't know.
He's, like, 17 with a full man beard.
Yeah.
Right?
Tin, you and I, we have the same birthday.
Oh, I know, exactly the same birthday.
Really?
Yeah.
See, April. That's why I can never go to Tin's parties or anything, because I'm always busy celebrating Ben's.
Yeah.
In church or
hanging with the cool kids.
Yeah. But Ben is way more, like, hanging with the cool kids than I am. I'm, like, super
old
now.
Okay, we need to introduce Ben. Or, Ben, are you ready?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Here for one of the old, members of the old crew, whatever.
The oldest crew.
Bay Area Comics superstar.
Ben was
with
Puppy Toss, which is
I know,
super
Puppy
old.
Toss. Yeah, we'll get into that. Is Ben Catmull, who just came out with a new book called Ghosts and Ruins from Fantagraphics, and it's a stunning book, I have to say.
It is a stunning book, I do have to say.
So, welcome to the program, Ben.
Thank you.
So, well, let's start off with talking about
the
books, and then we'll talk about being old and the olden days where it was awesome. So, Ben, I saw this book recently at a bookstore, and even though it's a Fantagraphics book, it's not a comic. It doesn't seem like a comic.
It's an art.
Yeah.
So, did you intend it to be kind of comic-y, or were you hoping that, are you going a different direction on this?
I wanted to make a something that's like a coffee table book, you know, and like nice, full of nice pictures. Something you keep next to the toilet,
where your coffee table is.
Yeah, like a gift book. I thought making like a kind of a more of a bookstory gift book would have a better chance of selling.
You did not have faith in comics. You were like, ugh, no one's gonna buy comics, but they will buy a gift
that's
book.
That's an old cartoonist answer, isn't it?
Well, when you make comics, it's a lot of work.
Yeah.
So no, I mean, I think comics could sell if it's really good. It just takes a lot longer to make a good comic than it is to make a good gift art book.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to, make a book where I could just flex my illustration muscles to their fullest. And then make kind of a gift book out of that in a reasonable amount of time. So it was kind of a trying to be practical, sort of.
Yeah.
So I mean, I still, you know, it's not because I think comics are lame or can't sell, but it's I wanted to finish something cool in a reasonable amount of time.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, even though this book is different and new, it is very connected with the Ben Catmull style. I mean, your last book with Fantagraphics, Monster Parade, has a kind of a similar vibe to it, you know? Like, it's got the spookiness, of course, but then it's the way in which you tell the story. Sometimes when I look at this coffee new book that you have, basically this book is formatted in a way that on one side is a beautiful illustration,
mm-hmm.
and the other side is a text. And, you know, the same text is the same kind of style that was happening in Monster Parade, especially the story where you're describing the town, right?
Yeah.
So even though it's not a comic, it's very narrative, and it's definitely Ben Catmull, right?
Just kind of like not quite a story, and lots of dry humor.
That's what I thought about this book. Is that you're drawn to the art because it is a coffee table book, but it's the text is just as strong and necessary. I mean, that's any I like a comic, and that the humor comes. I mean, first you see the art is all foreboding and haunting, but then you see the text and there's that the witty, like the funny, humorous part of the Ben Catmull humor.
But the thing is, I just like in Monster Parade, I read it and I loved it, but I never thought it was funny. I was like, this is super cool, but I always thought it was super serious.
You just thought trying to be all dark and weird.
Yeah, but then I remember when my eyes was open was when you actually did a book reading. I saw a
mm-hmm.
book reading
was-
at the Berkeley Library, and you read that book, and I was like, whoa, it's hilarious, because I was laughing like the whole time, and I was like, oh, and I think it really opened my eyes to to your book, and I was like, oh, this is a whole new, because your humor is really dry.
Yeah, classic.
And so, if you didn't hear you read it, you would say, oh, okay, this is pretty serious. This is pretty straightforward and serious. do you plan on doing any, readings of Ghosts and Ruins? Because I think if people are in town and you're doing a reading, I would highly suggest anyone check that out, because I think the way that you read the book sometimes opens up how you're supposed to be looking at it.
The only time I've done readings is when I was just kind of randomly asked to be one. Like,
uh-huh.
I don't know how to set one up.
Nobody's
asked me to do a reading yet.
Oh, no one's asked you to do.
We were supposed to do a reading at Floating World, because I was doing a signing at Floating World.
Yeah.
But then nobody showed up.
At Floating World?
Well, no, there was four friends there.
What?
And it would be kind of weird to, like, read to my buddies.
Yeah.
Stroking their hair.
I think that's the weirdest thing, is that when you
holding
go to...
holding them close to your bosom.
When you go to, like, a book signing or a book reading, and, like, nobody shows up. It's just, like, eight people that have seen you, like, 100 times. But you, like, I always have to go on. Like, the bookstore always expects me to read anyways. And so I'm just sitting there reading this book to people that have read it like 100 times, and it's just kind of like it's like weird, uncomfortableness.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, we skipped that. We skipped the awkward part.
The cool thing also about this book, I'm digressing from the, I'm segueing from your awkward social interactions. Is this is all done on Scratchboard?
Sort of. I don't. Is this
on
this
Masonite,
parts that,
right?
This part that seemed like
wait,
it's watercolor.
Tell
I don't
me.
Know.
Tell me more about the process of the what you did.
It's stuff called clayboard.
Uh huh.
And the board is spelled B-O-R-D for some reason. But it is like basically like a scratch board on Masonite.
Mm-hmm.
It's an uninked scratch board, so it's white. Wow. And then I just do like a dense pen drawing with a uniball.
Uh-huh.
Like a really dense, hatchy, cross-hatched uniball drawing. And then I smush it around with a wet brush. And then I scratch it away with a scratch tool. So I scratch in the white, and then I just kind of layer in like I do. I add more black with the uniball, and I add more white with the scratch tool. And I use the wet paintbrush and water down some uniball ink and do gray tones on top of it.
Oh, okay, so that's the tones that you see.
Yeah, yeah. There's mm-hmm. black lines like and white lines yeah. and gray lines.
Okay,
so this took some time too to do.
Yeah, each one of those illustrations took like 1 or 2 weeks.
Yeah,
oh,
I
whoa.
Would imagine that. And how big are they?
11 by 14.
Jeez.
This book is also a really well produced book. It's a hardcover.
Yeah.
The hardcover has an awesome like
texture. Yeah.
Did you have a lot of
and
input
really
on
well.
On how the book was produced or? Did they just say that they have a designer and they designed it this way?
No, they let me do whatever I wanted. I thought they might have a hotshot designer do it for me.
Uh-huh.
But then for some reason I just wanted to give them a placeholder for the cover just in case like they were too busy or somebody got sick. And
uh-huh.
so when I gave them the placeholder, they're like, okay, thanks for the cover. And that's the cover.
So
it's a good cover.
It's beautiful. I mean,
yeah.
the did you know that it was going to be hardcover and all that?
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
Okay. Fantagraphics produces some awesome books,
mm-hmm,
I got to
mm-hmm.
say.
Yeah.
So you spent a couple of years working on this, right?
Uh-huh.
This was a long time.
I'm on the couch.
What?
A lot of time sitting on the couch.
Oh, don't you have a studio? You have a studio in Oakland, don't you?
Yeah, yeah.
I remember seeing some of these really early on when there was like an open studio, and amazed at it back then.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I got my studio so my cats can't eat my work.
Uh huh.
But they can't eat clayboard, so I could work on it at home.
Okay, good. All right. So we'll get back to more about the book later, but let's just talk about being old again, because that we're getting away from the theme of the actual podcast.
I mean, I did have a question though about you know, you're talking about the process of you know drawing and Masonite and all that, but how did you, when did the writing come into play? Like, did you just start drawing, making these paintings, and then you figured out a story to it? Like, how did you work that all out?
I had the ideas for the writing. I mean, I had the ideas kind of behind what the writing was going to be.
Uh-huh.
And then I just figured I would just do all the illustrations and then just kind of quickly write it out. And then I found that writing is hard.
Yeah.
Because I knew what the ideas were, but the actual just like phrasing of it,
uh-huh,
for some reason was just getting it like simple and perfect without sounding like stupid or dorky or wordy that took a whole lot of rewriting. And I spend most of my time drawing, so I think the word writing part of my brain is kind of atrophied a little, so
mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
it was a little tough to do that.
Yeah,
I love the text, like the way you say things, and it's at first I was like, is he trying to be poetic in that type of children's book kind of way, you know. And then I realized that it doesn't rhyme or anything, but the way in which you phrase things is almost lyrical,
mm-hmm.
you know, in the way that it's written. So I think it's really well written, and that's to me, if I did a book like this, I would think that that part would even take longer
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
than the actual illustration
yeah.
itself, you know. Because as artists, we're pretty good with the pictures. It's the
yeah.
words that sometimes are really hard. And the way you phrase the words, it's just beautiful.
Yeah.
And then I think it really the neat thing about this is it's not like a typical like children's book or like illustrated book, but like the text, you really have a comic aesthetic because
mm-hmm.
the text and the pictures, they work together
right.
as opposed to like the text just you know narrating the pictures and the pictures just illustrating the text. You know, they really
they need each other.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so I think that's really cool.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So do you want
to talk about old people?
Let's talk about old people, then we can come back.
Okay, we can come back to style and stuff. Okay.
So you started working on comics a long time ago, right? Like you started doing minis.
A long time ago, Ben. Right?
I would say, would it be 20 years now? How old? How long ago?
Because 1990 was last year, right?
I first learned about mini comics in 93.
Uh-huh.
I mean, if you want to predate,
wow.
like, my comic buying habit.
Yeah.
Because I collected comics when I was a kid.
Uh-huh.
And then I decided I didn't like mainstream comics anymore in 1990.
1990.
I remember that. Yeah, I remember that was the year where my collection ended. Because that was the year that Alan Davis stopped drawing Excalibur.
Uh-huh. You're in high school, right? In 1990? Like, you were you're like a sophomore in high school.
No, I was just starting high school.
Oh, man.
Or was about to start.
He's like just like
yeah.
guy.
Yeah, so I was like, not stop. Yeah, I was like, I don't know, burning my toys for fun and like not, you know, stopped going to the comic store and started growing my hair long. But yeah, I remember. Yeah, I just kind of got disillusioned with the comics I was collecting because Excalibur got kind of ugly looking.
Yeah.
Todd McFarlane.
I love how the whole like mainstream comics world to you hinges on Excalibur. Like,
well, that was like my favorite comic then for some reason.
Really?
But also, yeah, I was also into McFarlane in the late 80s.
Uh-huh.
But then he started writing his own comics, and so then I stopped reading McFarlane comics.
Well, who was in Excalibur? Who was that girl with the like the pink outfit and the purple hair?
The pink outfit and the purple hair?
Yeah, she was like Captain Marvel's girlfriend or something.
Pink outfit.
Oh wait, yeah, she was like a shapeshifter.
Yeah. She had like kind of
blonde hair.
Yeah, kind of like wings on her arm.
Yeah, I forget. I guess she wasn't my favorite
like
character.
Like this and has the crown.
Yeah.
That's not.
Yeah, I totally forget. Yeah, there was Captain Britain. I think it was.
Yeah,
it was
Captain
like the
Britain's
British
the
Captain
guy.
Marvel.
Yeah.
And,
anyways.
Now I see why you.
Yeah. So,
I was also reading Akira that when Epic was and they just, I think those just kind of petered out. Like they just kind of stopped in 1990.
So when you started reading like alternative comics and, you know, dropping Marvel and stuff like that, and you're in high school, well, did that make you, I mean, this is going to be a weird question, but did that make you kind of cool? Or did it make you kind of like, oh my god, that guy is a weirdo. All he does is read these weird comics. Or did people go, oh my god, that guy is a cool dude?
I don't think anybody cared.
Oh, okay. Your choice in comics did not sway your popularity in high school at all?
No.
And wait, is this in the Bay Area too? I don't think
so. Yeah. Well, I went to the story is it was in 93, and so it was like 3 years after I stopped caring about comics. But for some reason, I was still drawing comics for myself.
Uh-huh.
Like weird comics that I had no idea what I was going to do with them. And then some friend of mine told me about a group of mini comics artists called Puppy Toss.
Okay.
And they would hang out at the Round Table Pizza on University Avenue every Friday.
That's fresh. That's a lot of. I've heard there's many stories of great bands and artists that are coming out of that Round Table.
Yeah.
Were they the same age as you?
They were all a few years older than me. They were all like kind of punky and kind of gothy, and they all had they all knew about music I didn't know about, and they were all like out of their parents' house and had cars and jobs. And I was still in high school, so they were like all these like cool adults.
I feel like they should make that Round Table a national landmark, you know?
Yeah.
Like
they went there because Landry Walker worked there.
Oh, okay. So who were these puppy toss shady dudes?
There was Dylan Williams was one of the founders.
Yeah.
And there was this guy named Ken Capelli.
Okay.
And Scott Hsu Storaker.
Okay.
That's one of those hyphenated married names. And Gabby Gamboa.
Okay.
There was a bunch of people. They originally had this group anthology called Grunge from the late 80s or early 90s they started before that. And then one of the dudes from Grunge like stole Ken Capelli's girlfriend.
Okay.
And so Ken quit and started Puppy Toss, and like Dylan and Scott came with him.
Uh-huh.
And it was just like a loose collective, and everybody who was, you know, dressed weird and was into alternative comics in the East Bay would just kind of go there and hang out.
Oh, cool. And they, would you guys draw when you hung out, or basically just went there and just talked?
I think a bit of all of the above. They had it was all kind of based around an anthology they had called Skim Lizard.
Okay.
And
yikes. These names. It's almost as if these guys, like,
you're the early 90s.
Like, they wanted to be in bands or like, they really love punk and stuff like that, but weren't, like, they wanted the music part. So they, you know, they start all these anthologies and groups that have, like, names that were very, like, punk bandish. Right?
Something like that. I mean, they were, like, kind of alternative pop culture junkies. I don't think they were musicians, but they were all like, they were just, you know, knew about all this alternative underground stuff because it was before the internet.
Yeah.
So you had to like know people, and it was kind of more, I don't know, it was more like special, or you had to work harder to find out about that stuff.
Cool.
So it was really fun though to meet those people.
Okay, did they do comics together? Like, did you become part of, like, a collective? Like, did you guys do an anthology together?
Yeah, that's right. They had Skim Lizard, and the way they did Skim Lizard is it was just open submissions. Like, anybody from anywhere could submit a comic, and then everybody in Puppy Toss would vote on whether or not it makes it in or not.
Okay.
Which is kind of cool, because then you didn't have that thing where you invite somebody to make a comic for your anthology, and then they make something you don't like, and then you're crap. What do I do?
What if somebody in Puppy Toss like put a comic in Skim Lizard and everybody was like, we don't like this very much. Has that ever happened?
I think if you're in Puppy Toss, you would kind of get a free pass.
Okay. There was no voting with the Puppy Toss.
There's an issue of Puppy Toss of Skim Lizard that's just me and Dylan and Gabby Gamboa. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at it recently, and the comic that I did is like really, really, really awful. I was like 17 or 18 when I drew it, and I was just thought, like, God, those people were so nice to put up and let this like dumb teenager hang out with them and draw comics.
That's pretty awesome.
That is pretty awesome. Yeah. I mean, so then
the
you,
comics
you,
world
you,
is so, you know, well.
Yeah, inclusive.
Yeah.
So you stayed with those guys for a while, huh?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I
think the other cool thing they did was they had a mail order catalog.
Okay.
And they would carry any self-published comic.
Wow.
Like they didn't curate or anything. They're just like, if it's self-published, we'll carry it. And so like pretty much everything that was going on in the mini comics world was, we had like in a cabinet, at the Puppy Toss office.
Uh-huh.
And since that was like before the internet,
Wait, the Puppy Toss office?
Yeah, they had they rented an office.
Was it by the Round Tables?
Yeah.
No, it was on. I think it was on Shattuck, like on Dwight, I think.
Wait, they made enough money with Skim Lizard to afford an office?
Well, there's two things that they had that made it easier. One is it was, you know, Bay Area before internet. But the building that we rented the office at, it was also Scott Hsu Storaker's day job was for the guy that owned the building.
Okay.
Yeah, he was some like weird. I don't even know what the guy did. Some medical experiments or something like that. I'm not sure.
Human centipede experiments.
He like owned the building and he had some weird thing. And that was Scott's day job. But the building was like mostly empty.
Okay.
So it wasn't like there was a lot of competition because we were in this suite of offices, and so there's this whole suite area, and there's only like two other people in the whole suite.
Okay.
There was like a driving school next to us. There was like these young Asian like college kids that had a driving school, and then there was this like I don't know what he did, but there it was like this black guy. He was like this nerdy black guy who, you know, like wore like a button up white shirt and glasses, and he was always blasting Meatloaf from his office. and he was also constipated.
Oh, you mean the singer Meatloaf?
Yeah, the singer Meatloaf. Back when, you know, I'll do anything for love, back when that was all over the place.
Oh my God.
I go in there and that guy would just be blasting Meatloaf from his office.
How did you know he was
so basically
constipated?
Our office is right next to the bathroom, and he would take like these half hour like loud grunty poops.
Oh, that doesn't mean he's constipated. It just means he was like into going to the bathroom.
He just enjoys the feeling of poops.
Yeah.
All right, so I know that Puppy Toss ended in like kind of like a hail of gunfire, right?
What?
Right?
No.
Wasn't it like just a crazy ending to Puppy Toss?
No, it just kind of slowly fell apart.
Oh, okay. So, when I met you,
that's where rumors get started.
No, I thought it was, like, crazy. Like one guy went out with this other guy's girlfriend, and then he this guy in the leg, and all that stuff. I thought that was what happened.
No, that's what grunge ended with somebody stealing somebody's girlfriend.
Oh, okay.
And then Puppy Toss, people just went their separate ways, and then it just kind of fell apart.
Did they all remain friends? I mean, it's obvious that you remain friends with Dylan afterwards, right?
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, when I went through college and kind of, you know, stopped doing comics for a while, and then when I got back out of college, I wanted to reconnect with the comics people, and Dylan was the one who would reciprocate.
Okay.
So Dylan was the one who was still doing comics, but others were like kind of branching off and doing other.
Yeah, Dylan is the one who still cared that a young cartoonist wanted to hang out with him.
Yeah.
Stick with me, kid.
Yeah. So then.
Oh, I forgot to mention when I was buying comics in like around 89 or 90, Dylan worked at my comic store.
You mean Comic Relief?
No, Stand Up Comics, Nel Cerrito.
Oh, okay. But then he went to work at Comic Relief, right?
Yeah,
later he went to Comic Relief.
That's so funny.
I went to Comic Relief for like 2 months.
That's funny that there was a comic store called Stand Up Comics.
It's still there.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Wow.
That's crazy. So then Dylan ends up moving to Portland, right? And you stay.
We went to Olympia first for a while. Then.
Okay. And then you stay in the Bay Area.
Yeah.
And you're doing your comics, and Dylan is doing his comics.
Yeah.
Now, when I met you, we met at Jason Shiga's house, and you just happened to be into another group, right? So how did you get involved with Jason and...
Oh, Jason's Drawing Night?
Yeah, Gene Yang and Derek and stuff like that.
It's kind of fuzzy. I think it was after San Diego 99.
Okay.
I got in touch with Jason through Dylan.
Okay.
Of course.
Uh-huh.
Because Jason was kind of like the first Sparkplug artist.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right.
And even before Dylan was doing Sparkplug, he would table with Jason.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, it goes back further than that, sort of. Some of my friends went to high school with Jason Shiga.
Okay.
And one of my friends had his, because Jason Shiga did, the high school he went to had an animation program, and so Jason just did a whole lot of these.
Maybeck.
Yeah, at Maybeck. And he did all these bizarre, like, disgusting, violent, animated short films that everybody loved.
Uh-huh.
And one of my friends had, my friend Sean McCardle, had all those on videotape.
Okay.
And so I'd seen all his animations a whole bunch of times. So I was already kind of like a Shiga fan.
Okay.
But actually, the first time I met Shiga, Shiga doesn't remember this at all because wasn't memorable, but there was one day where my school had a day off, so I went to hang out with Sean at Maybeck.
Uh-huh.
And he pointed Jason Shiga out, and he's like, "That's Jason Shiga. He collects fish eyeballs. You should go say hi to him."
Yeah, yeah, I've heard the story before.
And so I just went up, and I was like, "I hear you collect fish eyeballs." And he's like, "That's right, I do." That was like the extent of the conversation.
So then you
that's
started...
That's pretty much the extent of a lot that's of nice. Conversations with Shiga. Yes.
Yes.
Goodbye.
There was that Maybeck had a... some of the students spontaneously started their own school newspaper.
Uh-huh.
And I guess the guy who was the principal of Maybeck was really into the composer Arvo Part.
Uh-huh.
And so these kids started a newspaper called Arvo's Parts. And Jason would contribute to that.
Okay.
He would like do like humor writing and stuff. And I remember one of the things he did was he did anagrams of everybody's names. Wait, is anagram the right word? The one where he rearranges the letters and makes them into different words.
Is that an anagram?
Yeah, anagram.
Okay.
I was hoping I would accidentally say palindrome. But yeah, he'd make anagrams. And he'd make everybody's, like, really, kind of gross and demeaning.
Uh-huh.
But then he pretended that his middle name was Ido so that he could change his name to Jason, he is a god.
Dork. So then you were drawing with the... It's interesting to me is that you were kind of like a member of two kind of influential Bay Area cartoonist groups, right? Because even though...
Oh, yeah, I didn't answer your first question. I mean, your last question.
What was my last question?
About how I got into Jason's
Yeah, so how did you start drawing with them?
Well, after Dylan, I got formally introduced to Jason through Dylan. And then I went to, I think it was San Diego 99, and I met some of Jason's friends. And then I got invited to an art night at, but that was back when I was at Derek Kirk Kim's. And so there's an art night there with, it was Derek and Jason and Gene Yang.
Uh-huh.
And that's where I first met Gabrielle Bell.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And she used to show up to that. And then it moved to Jason's house for some reason.
Because Derek went to Korea.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And so that's where I met Ben. But the funny part about that whole story is when I met you guys at the drawing night, there was also, you were also there, Jesse Hamm would come, and so would Jason Thompson, and Lark, Gene, Jason, and me.
Yeah.
And I remember they did an article in the newspaper about that art night in the San Francisco Chronicle. But all they did was they just focused on the Asian people and called it like an Asian drawing group. Took pictures. I think they even cropped you out of it.
Yeah.
And it was just like, whatever. And then recently, like there's been like these
they
like
keep doing that.
Yeah, there's been these shows and like stories about the art night crew, and mm-hmm. they keep cropping all the white people out. They
it's
keep
like Ben is the drummer.
No, but not just Ben, like
from
all white people, and like and every time Lark and Gene always says, "Well, you know." There were white people, and everybody's and even as they're saying it to this, like, panel of people, you can tell the panel of people just, like, zoned out.
Yeah.
As soon as they were, like, white people, they were, like, zoned out. They all wanted to focus on the fact that there were a bunch of Asian cartoonists that I met.
And I mean, I was there for, like, only one or two.
Yeah.
And I'm sure I could have been.
I mean, Reno was a member of the Art Night crew, but Ben still like.
Ben is.
I was the token white guy.
Yeah, but not really the token white guy because we didn't really put include in anything. But those were some fun days, and you were working on a comic called Paper Theater. Yeah, and you published. You won the Zyrk at the time, right?
Yeah, I made it as a mini comic, and then did a Zurich funded collection of it.
Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Do you still have some of those at the house?
I have about a little over 1,000.
Oh, you're almost there.
Recently my cat developed a limp, I think because he jumped down from someplace really high.
Uh-huh.
And so I've been using boxes of paper theaters to as little like stair steps up to the counters. So he doesn't have to jump down too far.
One day when you're covers. Famous, those box of paper theater is going to finally pay off.
Yeah.
People are going to be like, where can we get paper theater? It's all on eBay. You're selling them off like your 1,000 one at a time.
Well, yeah, I'm hoarding them all.
So
I shouldn't say this, but I think I tossed about 4 boxes into the dumpster. I was just trying to clean up clutter. I mean, and there still have over 1,000 left, so it's...
How much did you print?
3,000?
In between working on comics, you are also a pretty accomplished animator. You worked for like so many, companies. Mm-hmm. You've done some high-profile gigs. And you always come back to comics. I feel like you do that, all those jobs, so you can do comics. Which is weird because nowadays you see this migration of cartoonists kind of quitting comics to go to animation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Were you just never really that into animation and were way more into comics? How do you feel about the two industries?
When I first got into the character animation, it was when 3D computer graphic animation was completely new.
Okay.
And I was at Academy of Art and they had the best one of the best programs for studying it.
Uh-huh.
And so when I got into it, it was this part of like this whole, it was like kind of like pioneering a whole new medium.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was really new and exciting that way. But now it's just kind of the norm. Like everything is 3D animation.
Yeah.
And so now I'm left with the fact that I'm not really that into all ages movies.
Okay.
And I just kind of do it because it pays well.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you just basically do it so that you can do comics, even though, like comic. The thing is though, comics is sort of like animation, where like most of comics is made for an all ages group. There's mm-hmm. a small community that makes comics. For adults. I mean, isn't there a small community of animators that are making movies for adults? Not like porn or anything, but like, you know, like movies that are more adult oriented?
I guess you could consider like, that's the kind of stuff they'd show at like Mike and Spike's or those animation mm-hmm. festivals.
Uh-huh.
But, I don't really know much about that community.
Okay.
I just know that it's like it's even more time consuming than comics. Like it takes as long to make a couple of minutes of animation as it would to do a whole graphic novel.
Yeah.
So to do animation for just as like an art form, you know, as for self-expression would be even more hard work and even less rewarding.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What was I saying? You're also a movie maker. You've made a few little short music videos and stuff like that that are also pretty amazing. Do you plan on doing any more of that, or are you just going to stick with the comics and illustrations for a while?
So far, I think I've only done, like, experiments or just kind of screwed around just to get the handle of filmmaking.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because I did a music video for my friend Sean McCardle.
Uh-huh.
And it was, of course, that was mostly just... just putting myself in a situation where I can experiment with just how to use film in general.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you make a music video, you can just come up with a bunch of random images and edit them together and just kind of like screw around and experiment
uh-huh.
without too much structure. So it's just a way to kind of play around and get a feeling for it. And then I did some... homework assignments that are like for films.
Okay.
But nothing I'd put in a festival.
Okay.
But I am trying to do something serious right now or for reals.
Okay.
With
like movie wise?
Yeah. With short film movie wise, not animation.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm experimenting with miniatures And whenever I say that, people are like, oh yeah, stop motion, which is not what I'm doing.
Oh, that's crazy.
whenever I say miniatures, people just immediately assume that I'm doing stop motion. But yeah, when I was making the music video, I wanted to experiment with miniatures in that, and I built this miniature house, and I realized that I could take my iPod, and put a movie on the iPod, and put it in the window of the building.
Okay.
And so then you can look at the building and just see somebody just like sitting on the couch or washing dishes or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided to, now I'm going to try and make an actual short film where that's made for that technique where I got a couple of iPods that are like iPhones,
uh-huh.
iPod touches.
Yeah.
And so I'm building buildings where you can put movies on the iPod touches and put them in the windows. And so it's kind of like a voyeurism, like you're spying on people inside their buildings.
That's like a mixed media,
Thing.
Is one of the stories about the temporary stalker?
No.
So wait, does that mean that we're not going to get to see another Ben Catmull book for a while, or are you working on something?
Well, I've been telling you something on the side because I can only work on the short film miniature stuff at my studio.
Uh-huh.
Otherwise, the cats will eat it.
Yeah.
And so whenever I get home, I sometimes just get bored, and I've just been sketching out ideas for other comics.
Okay.
But I'm really slow, so I'm sure all of this will take a couple of years at least.
So there's still plans to do like another Monster Parade?
Yeah, what happened to Monster Parade?
Oh yeah, I started Monster Parade number 2.
Okay.
And I redrew like the first 5 pages over and over and over again, and then they kept looking stupid.
Okay.
And then I got stressed out about spending all this time on something that wouldn't make any money and nobody would like. So I did Ghosts and Ruins instead.
Okay.
And I still kind of want to do it, although one of the ideas I had is a short for Monster Parade. I'm actually thinking of expanding into something bigger. So I don't know what's going to happen with Monster Parade.
That's tough because, I mean, you just want to start a project. And then you have this bigger, idea. And then it just sort of is this, does it seem like this overwhelming thing? I'm just wondering how you deal with, trying to get inspired to do your comics and...
Yeah.
Because I think that's a thing that a lot of cartoonists, especially older cartoonists who are trying to get back in the game,
uh-huh.
like 10, are old struggling fam. With. Yeah.
Yeah. We're old. I'm too old. I think I'm too old for comics.
I'm a little worried about all the long hours alone scratching away, at a table.
Uh-huh.
Like what that does to me, and that's one of the reasons why I'm trying film is to do an art form where I'm more active and have to interact with people more. Because working on Ghosts and Ruins, like all those like months of just sitting on the couch and like scratching away, it was kind of tough. So trying to find a balance of where I can make art without feeling isolated and going crazy.
Yeah.
Because it's like, when I'm doing it all the time, it's tough. But then when I'm not doing it, I get that compulsion that I have to make more art.
Yeah.
Do you find... Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh. But yeah, I think with Monster Parade, I gave myself this structure where I wanted each story to be a different style. And I think that just made it hard. Because I was trying to draw in a style that... Like, I would...
Wasn't your style.
Each new story that wouldn't come to me... Naturally, I would try and have to reinvent myself with each story, and I kind of successfully did that with the train one,
because
I don't like it's all like smooth and bubbly, and I don't naturally draw smooth and bubbly, so it kind of worked. But then I was trying to do another one that was like an old Victorian children's book, like a kind of Window in the Willows kind of thing, and like I couldn't like get that look. And I kept just getting frustrated with myself with that. So I guess that's why I got kind of frustrated with Monster Parade, is having to reinvent myself with each story. So I might focus on something where I where I just find one style that works and just do one big story, which makes a lot more sense.
But speaking of style, you've been doing this scratchboarding style for a while now.
Yeah.
Ever since I met you, ever since Paper Theater,
mm-hmm.
And really the only other person I know that does scratchboard comics is what, Thomas Ott's his name? Thomas Ott?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did Eric Drucker do that?
Did Drucker do scratchboard?
Oh yeah, Drucker.
I think he did like spray can bull crap, right?
What?
No, that's Peter Cooper.
Oh, okay, that guy sucks.
Oh yeah. The stencils and stuff.
Yeah. Did you have any people that you kind of looked up to that were also doing this style, or were you just like, I'm just gonna do this thing, you know, I'm not gonna look at other people's, or
mm-hmm.
were you like, okay, you know, did you have any inspiration behind your style?
No, I think it came from my own natural tendencies, because when I first started doing comics at Puppy Toss, I like my first comics, I would just fill things with lots of hatchy lines.
Uh-huh.
And then I started, got some white gouache.
Okay.
And then I tried to do one where I made hatchy black lines and hatchy white lines with the white gouache, just
uh-huh.
because I think it's just because I'm really into texture and, you know, shading and atmosphere,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of a dumb thing to be into if you're trying to make comics, because it's...
Yeah.
Yeah,
but
I was naturally drawn to, and then I got frustrated with how, you know, sloppy and inconsistent the gouache was, and then I just started experimenting with scratchboard.
Mm-hmm.
But do you feel that you find inspiration in, like, a lot of people are, when they see your work, they think of, you know, Charles Adams or, like, you know, Edward Gorey or even like
Rene French?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, do you find inspiration in those types of, you know, types of storytelling?
I try to, I'm like a book collecting,
yeah,
movie collecting guy, so I observe as much stuff as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it's when your influences are too few, that's when people think you're being derivative.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What was I about to say? I think another thing is, I probably shouldn't admit this, but when I first did started that Civilization Studies Illustrated, that second story in Monster Parade, I was invited. I originally started that as to be in somebody else's anthology.
Okay.
And so when I came up with the idea, I just thought, I'm gonna come up with something that doesn't have a story, just so I can get it done quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's so like such a like a non story kind of a story.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess both that and Ghosts and Ruins are just me being stressed out at how much time it takes to do a story.
Yeah.
And so now it looks like it's what I do is make these non-story stories.
Yeah.
But they are both motivated by being practical and trying to finish something within a reasonable amount of time. And so that's why it kind of has like this Edward Gorey, like simple, straightforward storytellingness to it. But I mean, I do love Edward Gorey, so I guess you could say that they were influenced by Edward Gorey. But now I think I got that out of my system, and I need to get back into more traditional storytelling. So I'm not just a guy who just makes a picture with like a funny line next to it.
I gotta tell you, some of these drawings are
right.
Fun, goddamn nominal. They're like, you know, I mean, it's just like the smoke. The smoke that you have going on,
spaghetti smoke
in the wandering smoke is fucking,
yeah,
like what the fuck. And like
I got that from an old Japanese print, because I have a bunch of books of like,
yeah,
old Japanese, like
you see a little bit,
yeah,
of like of the lithography prints in
yeah,
the, like some of your water, but then you throw shit in like this light source, like the single light source,
mm-hmm,
is goddamn amazing. And just like, you know, like I've seen your work throughout the years, but I haven't ever seen it so like
detailed.
It's so it's complete, you know. I feel like you found, do you feel like, you know, this is the style that you're probably going to work on for a long time now, because this is like,
what's funny though is it's beautiful and like it looks so, but he's saying well, I had to get this done really fast, and this is
which is crazy.
Which is really insane.
Well, it was also just I wanted to like that. That kind of style isn't practical for comics.
Yeah.
Right.
So I also wanted to just have this one thing where I can show what it looks like when I just go full throttle on the textures and the lighting.
Yeah,
I can't do doesn't really work in comics. So it's like I put that out there to see like, well, that's what I can do when I do that. But when I go back to comics, it's going to be different.
It's phenomenal. I would love So here's one question I'm going to ask just because it's bugging me in my head. But was there ever a time when you did one of these and you're like, that doesn't look right, and just did like an exact same thing again?
There's like five or six of them that I started over.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
that's super crazy. Like this I'm just looking at one right now. This curtain, this like kind of veil curtain on the woman outside the window is fucking what the f. So I think that, you know, I would like to, and I think a lot of people, you know, I'm not usually I'm into like art shows that feature comic artwork. You know, I think it's kind of defeats the purpose of comics.
Because they're made for reproduction.
Yeah,
right?
But I would love to see these pieces, because these pieces aren't exactly, you know, comics. They actually look just like they're art pieces with words on one side. Mm-hmm. Is there any plans for maybe a show or something like this?
Maybe. I was talking to, there's no definite plans yet, but I was talking to Fantagraphics about maybe doing a signing, an art show close to Halloween. But we don't, none of that's figured out yet.
Yeah.
I have to applaud Fantagraphics for letting you do this book.
Yeah.
You know,
do you ever, like, sometimes, you know, this book could be a complete, like, crazy hit, or it could be just, like, so far out there that, you know, people don't get, do you ever, like, I can't believe Fantagraphics is just letting me do this thing? You know what I mean?
I don't know. Well, they're easy to work with because I don't. Well, I showed them the book when it was half finished.
Uh huh.
And I was like, and their response was like, "That looks cool. Let us know when it's finished."
Yeah.
Like they didn't sign me or anything like that or talk about advances. They're just like, they just, you know, told me it looked nice.
And then
I sent it back to them again when it was completely finished, and that's when they said like, okay, we'll publish it.
Some of these pages, Ben, are just got. Yeah.
It actually, I think the technique benefits from being shrunk down a little bit.
Yeah.
It actually looks kind of crappy when you expand it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, I can see how tight it is. I mean, some of the pieces, I just sort of just like, to me, I'm just like, that's impossible. Like, nobody can do that. But it is a phenomenal book, and I'm pretty stoked to have it. So I think we're at the point where we're gonna ask Ben about his life.
Oh, about his life.
The day in the life of Ben.
Oh, a day in the life of Ben Catmull.
The day in the life of Ben Catmull.
Have you been preparing for this movie?
Right now, it doesn't seem like you're drawing any books, any comics. But let's just talk about a day in the life of when you were working on this book. You know,
while I was working on the book.
Yeah, yeah. So,
okay.
So you would wake up what time, Ben? You don't have any kids, and you don't have a
9:30-ish.
Okay.
And
9:30.
Oh, I was gonna say, wow, that's a new one. 1:30-ish. I'm like, woohoo! I was like, that's what we wanted.
No, I feel gross if I start getting up too late.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, I wake up. I eat oatmeal. I feed the cats. And I drink coffee and doodle. Coffee is doodle time.
Okay.
Coffee time is doodle time. It's idea time.
I always run into you at the Pete's Coffee. Oh, here's the thing. You know, we're Skyping this interview, but
yeah,
Ben actually
neighbors.
Just lives
down
right down
the street.
Yeah. you live like four houses away from me.
Yeah, we live like four houses. So I run into you at Pete's Coffee all the time. So are you doodling at Pete's Coffee, or do you usually have
coffee?
No, I don't
drink Pete's Coffee anymore.
Oh, okay.
I've given up on Pete's.
Are you're not a believer?
No, I'm no longer a believer. They're like the new. They're just like another Starbucks now.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. So where do you go instead?
It was a long, slow decline, but I finally gave up. Now I make coffee at home.
Okay, good.
Folgers.
Cold coffee.
Oh, you go all the way down there to get your coffee.
Yeah, I get beans from Cold Coffee, and then I grind them at home.
Is that where your husband used to work?
No, that was Chats.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Cold Coffee is near where Richard Sala lives.
Oh, okay. Dropping names, huh?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah, let's name drop.
Do you like?
And that's where you stalk Richard Sala.
Yeah. Do you? Is that when you videotape him for your movie project?
I've actually never seen Richard in his own neighborhood.
Oh, really?
I've only seen him when Dan invites him, when Dan Klaus invites him out.
Yeah.
Because he'll go hang out with Dan, and then he'll shop at Piedmont Grocery supplies, and then I'll run into him there.
That's so cool.
I run into
Ben
in Piedmont Grocery, too.
Yeah. We all run into each other at Piedmont Grocery.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
a new puppy doll.
That's the jam. Sometimes I just go into Piedmont Grocery just to buy one piece of bacon
and just
go out with it. Yeah, I know. Try to stalk Ben. Okay, so you drink coffee and doodle time.
Yeah, and that depending on what part of the process I would be in, because coming up with the idea, I'd have to concentrate and sketch and think about composition, but then once I got the composition down, then I can just kind of go into autopilot and sit on the couch and watch TV while I draw.
Mm-hmm.
And then I try to exercise a lot too.
What do you do, yoga?
yeah, actually, I've been doing yoga, but I also go to the gym and I go for bike rides.
So you're trying to be healthy? Is this something that's inspired by Dylan? Because I know that Dylan has gotten a lot of us slobs in the past to be healthier peoples. I know that Brubaker, Elijah Brubaker, and a couple other people have told me that, you know, Dylan really inspired them to become healthier people. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you got from Dylan, or were you just like, I got
it,
you know?
No, it was two things. One is, I guess I'm just kind of an anxious person, so if I exercise, then I sleep better.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I don't exercise, then I can't sleep. And the other thing is, I don't want to be fat.
Oh, yeah. Well, logical.
Yeah, that's logical.
Which gym do you go to, Ben? Just so we can stalk you.
So you can stalk me?
Oh, my God.
To Club Mariner in Alameda.
Ooh. Whoa, you go all the way there? All
right.
Well, my studio is it's right next to the tunnel.
Still, geez.
So my studio is near Jack London, so it just takes me about 2 minutes to get there from my studio.
I won't be stalking you.
Yeah, that's
pretty
rad.
It's like, it's full of old people shaped like potatoes. Like an old man gym.
I guess we fit in there.
Yeah, Tim could go there.
We're all super old. Yeah.
There's like a,
and we like potatoes.
There's a big like old Chinese man contingent there, and they all play ping pong.
That's awesome.
They're really good at it too. I pass by them, and they're like crazy good ping pong.
Do they impart like all these wisdom to you? Like,
no, they just yell at each other in Cantonese all the time.
You know, I gotta say, Ben, I've been seeing you around the neighborhood, and you are looking nice, bro.
Well.
I lost some weight.
You're looking nice. But just not the weight. It's like, you look nice.
Yeah,
saying.
I used to run a lot, and then it started to hurt my knees too much.
Uh-huh.
And then I saw Alvin Buenaventura with his shirt off.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, where do you exercise? And he,
Well, is he ripped?
When he's lost weight, he looks like Bruce Lee.
Shut the fuck up. That's crazy.
But he's like a super into yoga, and so he started taking me to yoga classes.
Hey, yoga.
Yoga's good.
Yoga's for jerks.
No.
It's for ladies.
Oh, it is for ladies.
Yeah, there's lots of ladies there. But that's not why I go. I go because,
uh-huh,
because I'm an old man with hurt knees.
Yeah, I know. All the ladies at the yoga class probably like, who's that old dude that keeps coming? All right, so you exercise. I don't even know what part of the day we're at now. What are we at, like 12 o'clock?
I don't know. I usually exercise in the afternoon.
Okay. So wait, you have coffee and then you don't do anything until the afternoon when you go exercise?
Well, I draw.
Okay, you draw. Okay.
Yeah.
And then in the afternoon,
it's all
kind of
loose, but yeah.
Okay. And then what happens after that?
And then I draw some more, and then I cook some food.
Okay. Are you cooking now? Because you didn't cook for a while.
Off and on, yeah.
Okay.
Good. I learned some good. I'm gonna name drop some more. I learned some good dishes from Vanessa Davis.
Who? I'm just kidding. I know Vanessa Davis.
She taught me some healthy recipes.
Uh huh.
That's another old cartoon.
Yeah, another. We just keep name dropping all the super oldest cartoons.
We should talk about more about history, Bay Area comics, stuff.
Why don't you name drop some of the young people that you've been hanging out with, like
the young people?
Yeah, like Lily Carey and shit.
I've seen her a little bit in Chicago.
Okay, so then, after you, exercise, you draw some more, and then, what is this now, TV time, chilling time?
Yeah, either TV or watch a movie or play PlayStation.
Okay. What are you playing right now? We just,
Ben and I bond with PlayStation.
Yeah, Rena and I are PlayStation buddies.
Yeah.
When Ben is online, I kind of,
me and Lark just got a PlayStation. Like
What is it?
PlayStation 3 or whatever?
It's 3.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's a 2.
We just got one for that game, Little Big Planet. And I know you were super into that, but we just got it, and it's super amazing.
Wow.
I made a Little Big Planet level.
Yeah, I know. You were super into that. So what are you guys playing now if you guys are PlayStation buddies?
I just finished The Last of Us.
Oh, yeah, that game is super, I was watching my cousin play The Last of Us.
Yeah.
And I was a little saddened about how, like...
No, don't tell me.
How so much of games nowadays is not your control. Like, so much you have to, like, relinquish a lot of control for the story.
Yeah.
Like, there are scenes that I'm just like, wait, are you doing this or is this the computer just doing this? He's like, yeah, I'm just watching this. So I'm just like, what the fuck?
It's like Metal Gear that
That's so weird. Don't you feel that that's kind of weird?
More video than games.
Well, it's just for tighter storytelling.
Yeah, I guess, but...
It's the more control the player has, the looser the storytelling has to be, so...
Yeah, but it just makes me feel like, there's really no different results. You only have either you lose or you win. There's no, in the old video games, you could, arrive at different places. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm mostly into,
in the olden
beautiful
days.
Environments that I can explore.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like the sandbox stuff.
Yeah, like the Red Dead Redemption or whatever, right?
I see Rena plays all the Assassin's Creeds.
Ben knows
you're
everything.
You're super into Assassin's
Creed.
Because I can see, Rena's my PlayStation buddy, so I can see everything she plays.
Yeah. We should make a game.
And
comic stuff.
I've been
like
playing L.A. Noire, and Ben will tell people she's playing L.A. Noire. She's busy. Okay.
I'm also buddies with PlayStation buddies with Jeff Levine and Kazimierz Sturzapek.
Oh goddamn! Dropping
these names.
Olden days. Like Jeff Levine is an olden day name.
Yeah,
bro.
He used to hang out in the Bay Area during the Puppy Toss days.
Yeah, I know, but that's like an olden day name.
He's one of my
friends.
You please not. Let's just drop some new
it.
Names
yeah.
now.
Dropping's
no
fun.
Way. There's no way you can do it.
Our audience is like all young kids,
it's like
so
a dog, new
they don't know anything about this.
Okay. Yeah, they're just like, who, Jeff Levine? Jeff Levine used to do some of the most amazing comics. I was super inspired by Jeff Levine comics. You know, his minis and then the ones that Dylan published, Those are so good.
The titles was The Days Go By Like a Broken Record.
Yeah. Oh, that's so good.
He has a new one out. He just published
the ones that he was just like would talk about how he hated living in LA or something.
Yeah.
It was so good. Uh-huh. Anyway, so stop being old. What was he going to say? Oh, can I be friends with you guys on PlayStation? How can I make that happen?
You just have to know our PlayStation name.
Oh, what's your PlayStation name?
I'll text it to you.
All right. Okay, so then you play some games, and what time are you going to sleep? You're just going to go sleep
right
afterwards?
That's like 9 hours, right? That's 9 hours.
Yeah, like 24 hours. You're
then I don't know. I go to bed like around 1-ish.
Okay. And then you wake up and do it all over again?
Yeah.
That's a pretty good life, Ben Catmull.
It seems very productive, I think. Very organized, very healthy. You have your, fun times with the video games,
uh-huh.
but you're also, being active.
So
you're not that old.
But so now that you're not working on this book, what are you doing to fill the time that you used to do with the book?
I'm going to studio and building miniatures.
Oh, okay. You're still building.
I stay at home and sketch.
Are you going to need any actors? Because I would like to be an actor.
Probably.
Okay. So let us know when you need actors.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's sad when you're just an extra in your friend's film.
I'm an extra on an iPod video in a... Yeah.
Voyeur video.
So, Ben, it's been a super fun time talking to you and going down the road, olden day road.
Yeah.
But we're going to have to let you go so we can call some of the younger guys that are on the exact list.
Yeah, they're just waking up.
Yeah. No, those guys are...
I don't even think they know they're on the
internet. Those guys are so fucking hungry. I think that's what gets me. Is like some of the younger guys, not only are they talented, but they're fucking hungry. And they're just like drawing all the fucking time. And like they're meeting and they're talking about comics.
Yeah.
And then they're going to meet somewhere and then draw some jam comics. And then they're like, let's do some more comics. Let's make minis. And you're just like, you're old now. You're like, I'm so tired.
I was just up in Portland, and every time I walked into a cafe, there was, like, some kid drawing comics.
Like, draw some comics!
Did you sit down the table and say, I can tell you a story of my life?
Yeah.
Let me tell you how much tedium and despair you have.
Yeah, let me tell you about puppy toss.
Let me tell you about
20 years ago at the round table.
But don't you feel like puppy toss back then had that same energy as the kids now, or do you feel like it's even, I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like when we were young, we had the same energy they did now. And one of the reasons I bring it up all the time is I am kind of envious of all their energy and all their passion and enthusiasm.
Maybe you just need to exercise.
I don't want to exercise. I'm done with that. Unless I go to that awesome old man Chinese gym that Ben goes to.
You should.
So, yeah, you might see me yelling at the... I might be playing ping pong.
Gym buddies.
Playing ping pong seems like it's a good way to get exercise.
I think so.
Yeah.
Well, Ben, like I said, thank you so much. This book is
freaking
amazing, and I am very proud to call you,
you a
friend
to
and
be
a person that.
Buddy with you.
Also, you know the back cover. You got like quotes from Renee French and stuff like that. Is she big enough to give you a quote? Really?
I had to. I bought the Renee French stuffed gopher.
Uh-huh.
You had to buy stuff.
No. I already bought that, and I sent her... I tweeted her pictures of me threatening to torture the gopher.
Oh, okay.
If she didn't give me a quote.
Really?
Yeah.
I do have a question to ask you.
Yeah?
Just read the back page here. Here's your thank you page. Dylan Williams, Eric Reynolds, Gary Groth, Kim Thompson, Paul Beresh, I don't even know who that is, Eric Haven, Richard Sella, Dan Klaus, Rena Ayuyang, Lauren Mahler, John Peck, who I love, Austin English, and Emery Liu.
Yeah.
Where is Tin Pham?
I restricted my list to people who gave me feedback.
Oh, okay.
Because if it became a list of my friends, then it would either be too giant, or then I'd have to leave people out, and then people would feel awkward.
Yeah, obviously.
Well, so, I do remember when I was at your studio, and I was like, "Oh, that's a cool picture, Ben." No, that doesn't count. Did that not that counts for you?
No.
I think I said three more sentences.
Yeah, how did Rena Ayuyang slip in there?
I was a member of the old art night crew.
So that's why I was in the Asian part of it.
I want to say that I gave Ben permission to put Dan Klaus next to my name. So.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that...
Yes, I gave him permission.
I can't believe you didn't get a quote from Dan Klaus,
though.
I'm
glad that he asked me first.
All right, Ben. Thank you so much being old with us, and I hope this book is amazing.
Uh-huh.
And and this is great because you're the whole reason Rena came out of hiding.
It is. It's true.
Like you know, Rena was ready. You were ready to bury this show, and then you're like,
No. I love this book, and I'm not just saying it because I'm in the thank you page.
Yeah, you are in the thank you page.
I am.
But you're not to like.
I love this book so much. I had to come out and like. Do this claptrap thing again.
You had to go hang out with Tin Pham.
Yeah, in a closet.
Yeah, right now we're in my closet office.
In a closet next to his pants.
My pants.
His pants hanging on the hook.
But you know, Ben, Rena has agreed that we're going to start this claptrap again. It's not just this one issue. We're going to episode. We're going to be doing this once every 2 weeks. So, but hopefully the next guest is going to be one of the young dudes.
Yeah.
Do you have any young people or comics that you think that we should be either reading or interviewing?
It seems like DeForge is the top of the
we
young.
We already interviewed that dude. That dude is super old now.
Did DeForge. Well, he's not a young dude, but have you done Chris Silla?
That dude is not young enough, bro.
Did Chris Silla already?
Yeah.
Well, that's old. I don't know who anybody.
But
you already did Eric Haven, right?
Yeah, but that dude is super old too, bro. Come on.
Oh, young people.
Yeah. We're trying to be cool, bro.
I don't know who the young people are.
Cool.
What about Todd Bach?
Todd Bach. Okay, good job, Ben. Okay, we gotta go now.
Bye, Todd.
All right. Well, we are gonna see, talk to Bach soon.
Yeah, we actually
have
to.
If he doesn't dodge us constantly. So next time we talk, in 2 weeks, we will be talking to Todd Bach. So look forward to that episode. Yeah. Okay, thank you so much, Ben. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, thank you.
Bye, bro.
Bye-bye.